So there's these stories that are back to back in the book of Matthew, and they deal with Jesus and kids. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" A common question among the disciples, as you find out if you journey through the Gospels too much, who's most important? We'd like to put ourselves in that position. He called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, "I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Then just a little bit later in chapter 19, what we get is little children being brought to Jesus. Jesus was, at this point, had gained notoriety as not just a powerful speaking rabbi, but a healer as well. And so blessing children would be something that would not have been uncommon for a rabbi in these days. So little children were brought to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples, they rebuked those who brought them. And Jesus said, "Were you not listening last chapter?" Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and don't hinder them." Number two, now he's saying this, "For the kingdom of heaven belongs to people like this." Jesus seems to prioritize this, and this is, if you've been around the scriptures, this is nothing brand new to you, the idea of the kingdom of heaven being something that childlike faith is welcomed and encouraged, okay? And so here's the thing, though. When we talk about something like childlike faith, one of the things that that we find out, I'm going to grab my notes because I put the wrong page of notes up here, and that's just going to be confusing for everybody if I hop into the middle of the message before we get started. So, but one of the things that's fascinating when you look at this is the idea of childlike faith is often talked about as kind of a faith that doesn't doubt, right? A faith that, you know, just like a kid, just trust and believe, you know, don't ask so many questions, to which I have a question for them, and that is, have you ever met a child? Kids ask, on average, 73 questions a day. And some of you are like, yes, this is not news to me. But for some reason, and that's what I want us to think about for just a moment. For some reason, as we grow up, we seem to ask less questions. We start to just kind of adjust to the way things are. We don't rock the boat as much. We're not as risky. We talked last week about a faith that is risky. We stop believing in new possibilities, and this is really a shame. Now, there's a great conversation about questions that we should be asking about God and exploring that and leaning into some of the mystery and all of that stuff. And the reality of doubt and faith and how they work together. But we're going to do something different for the next few weeks. We're going to talk about questions that kids ask each other that we have lost the ability to ask. Okay? And we're going to let the scriptures inform us on that. We're going to talk about questions that kids ask each other that we're not so good at asking anymore. And they deal with relationships. When Jesus says that we have to become like little children to enter the kingdom, But the kingdom is defined as broader than just life after death, right? We talk about this all the time. The kingdom is something that is both here, now, and in the future one day. So if Jesus is talking about entering the kingdom like children, he's not just talking about, you know, having a childlike faith after we die. Most of the time that Jesus is on earth, he's talking about how we relate to other people. So maybe when he talks about experiencing and stepping into the kingdom like a child, he's actually talking about how sometimes we need to relearn how we relate to one another to access the depths of the kingdom, and sometimes it's going to look childlike. This idea really enlarges childlike faith beyond trusting Jesus. And maybe sometimes there are things that we actually tell our children to do all the time that we just can't do very well ourselves. Here we go. We might say to a child, you know, our children, or, you know, why don't you, oh, that's an interesting question. Well, go over and ask. Go over to the other side of the playground. Go ahead and ask her. go ahead and ask him. We're going to talk about three questions over the next few weeks. Will you be my friend? Is the first question. Will you forgive me? Is the second question. And will you play with me? Is the third question. And so we're going to talk about what does Jesus do and teach us about these simple childlike questions and why have we maybe lost touch with how important and meaningful some of these questions are and what they get at. So we're going to take a few weeks and we're going to relearn. So, will you be my friend? I don't know quite where children learn this so well, but it seems to be a pretty common question, right, that kids ask among each other. Will you be my friend? Parents will then often ask their kids about their friendships. You know, who are your friends? What are they like? We want to know. And among kids, friendship is a pretty high priority. In fact, when you get to middle school and high school, what we know now is that the influence of friends rival and at certain times surpasses that of the influence of parents. Okay? Friends are really, really important, for better or for worse. Some of you with teenage kids and kids that are growing up are like, for worse. But friendship really matters. It's significant. It's important. But then as we get older, what ends up starting to happen is our professional lives or our families or whatever starts to take root in us for the next stage of life begins typically to minimize the importance and the focus of friendships in our lives. We now, you know, most kids would be able to say that they have a number of friends. Statistically now, the average in the United States is that adult men have less than one friend that they consider a close friend. That's the reality right now. So if you ask 100 guys, do you have any close friends who really know you? Less than 100 of them would be able to say yes. One friend, even. We have a little bit of a crisis on our hands. And I think, you know, often when we get involved with Jesus and the church, then we're kind of once again reminded how crucial friendships are. But then we've lost the ability to know how to ask, will you be my friend? And maybe the real deal is sometimes we need to learn how to become real friends with those that we already call friends. There are people in our lives that you might have been friends with for years that have never actually scratched beneath the surface of getting to the point of the gift of what friendship really is when it comes from God and when it's founded in Jesus. And it is an unbelievable gift if we learn how to access it. So there are surfaces that haven't been broken, and we need to realize that we're missing out on some of the gifts of the kingdom. So we're going to follow Jesus into that kingdom and talk about friendship. I find it beautiful that so many times in the New Testament, letters that are written use the word friend, and those are extended even to people that the writer doesn't know. I find that really interesting, and I wonder, where did they learn that? You know, Paul will start off so many of his letters, to my dear friends. Sometimes that's including an entire church where we know Paul only knows about two or three people, but he sees them as my dear friends. It happens multiple times. He and Barnabas, when they're traveling and doing their ministry, they often address the crowd as friends. Even in Lystra, where Barnabas does some kind of miraculous healing, and the people think that they are Zeus and who's the other one? Hermes? What? Not in this one. I think it's Hermes. Hermes and Zeus, yeah. And so they want to make them gods. And so what they say is, they say, friends, we are nothing more than people, right? So they see that Jesus is working in them and they want to make them gods. And their response is friends. And the word there is important because what friends does is it evens the playing field, right? When they say friends, we're saying, whoa, you're trying to put us up here. We're not up here. We're friends. Listen to what we have to say. And I think that's fascinating, and I find it beautiful. Where'd they learn this priority is an important question to ask. There's a passage in the book of John where Jesus is speaking with them, and he says this. He says, this is my commandment. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. This is an interesting phrase. I think if many of us look at that last line, we're like, well, that is first-class manipulation right there. That is a thinly veiled threat. You are my friends if you do what I command. How about that? How about that in our friendship? So this is the first, you know, first practical takeaway for friendship. Use "you are my friends if you do what I command" among the people that you know. No, it's not a great principle for person-to-person interaction, but here's the thing. What ends up happening is if we look, okay, we have to ask the question, so what is the command? Thankfully, Jesus spells it out really, really clearly. This is my command. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. Okay, so the command is to love one another. And so then when we start to parse this out, you are my friends if you do what I command. Jesus isn't saying you're not allowed to be my friends unless you love one another. That's the problem. What Jesus is saying is that when you begin to love each other, that is the only way that friendship actually can take root. So it's not about you're not allowed. It's that friendship can't truly happen unless you learn to love each other in the same way I have loved you. And that word for love, you'd be probably familiar with it. The word is agape. Agape is one of the three words in Greek for love. It's the most robust of the options for what love means. And agape means a self-giving, sacrificial type of love that is embodied by the self-giving sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, loving and forgiving and second-chancing over and over. And so he says, love each other like I have loved you, and then you will be my friends. That is making friendship possible because we are beginning to learn how to relate to one another, and you will begin to learn how to relate to one another. This is a powerful and important thing. I like that Jesus teaches his disciples what friendship looks like and says clearly, love like you've seen it modeled with this servanthood attitude. This is right after Jesus has washed his disciples' feet, okay? So this is immediately after that. And here's where we hit kind of a twist in the plot. Because as a church, we actually talk a lot about serving others. We do pretty well with it. You know, we talk about servanthood probably more or less every week. And it's a priority in the Bible, so no doubt. But I would suggest that serving others might actually be the easiest part of friendship. And this is where we get really uncomfortable. So let's sing karaoke instead. And then we'll get into it. So let's do this, because I think you're familiar with the song, right? Lean on me, come on. When you're not strong, and I'll be your friend, I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Now take note of this verse, come on. Please swallow your pride. If I have things you need to borrow, for no one can fill those of your needs that you won't let show. Now, a brand new chorus, okay, ready? I prefer to talk about help when you are the one that is in trouble. I'm not comfortable sharing myself and being vulnerable. All right, good. I actually did not submit a verse for Ben's worship song this morning, so I wrote one myself for this. So the deal, friends, the deal is it is actually much easier to say I got your back than my back needs getting. It is so much easier. There is very little risk in saying, hey, let me know if you need a hand. The whole song of Lean On Me is all about me being here and you being here and me saying, I'll come down. Now, servanthood is crucial and it's important, but friendship and servanthood aren't the exact same thing because servanthood is not mutuality. And one of the core understandings of friendship is that there must be a willingness to give and take. There must be an ability to be vulnerable. And this is the really hard thing. And this is where I'm really thankful that Jesus, in his sharing with his disciples in John 15, what he says is love each other. The thing that challenges us here is he doesn't say go love others. Then we could use this. Then we could use this to keep it one-sided. But he says each other. So anytime that you talk about each other, what you have to have is you have to have give over here, and you have to have, I don't like take, so I'm going to say receive. I? All right. So we have to do this thing that anytime Jesus is saying, listen, you shouldn't just, here's my command, go and love people. Great. I'm all about that. But learn to love each other. That means you can only allow the person, the other, to love if you are willing to receive it. And so there's this balance here that is absolutely crucial, even in the command that Jesus speaks about. Serving others doesn't create depth in relationship, but when we allow ourselves to be served, when we allow ourselves to be seen, when we admit our fears and our self-doubt, that's when the gates open up for the true power of friendship to take root. And we do serve one another, but it becomes a mutuality of service. So we have to change our views on vulnerability. Vulnerability is seen as weakness, right? Anybody a software designer or anything in here? If you're talking with somebody and they say, yeah, we found a vulnerability in the system, what needs to happen? You got to fix it, right? You got to fix that vulnerability. Like it or not, these things translate over into our psyches. We think vulnerability and we think, well, that means a weakness. That's a bad thing. If you're familiar with the work of Brené Brown, then yeah, I know one person. Do you have her book? You have her book in your hand? Yeah. Okay. So Brené Brown is a vulnerability researcher, and she's brilliant, and she's written a couple of fabulous books. Daring Greatly is a really good one. But she talks about vulnerability and courage, and she's a statistician. So she doesn't just write about what she thinks. They study stories of people, and they come up with concrete evidence about things like vulnerability and courage. Fascinating. But one of the things that she sees is that vulnerability is actually only possible with strength and courage. Vulnerability is never weakness. Every massive amount of strength, every battle won, every courageous act requires vulnerability. Every single one. And so we can't separate these two things. So the idea of being vulnerable as being weak is something that simply doesn't hold to the statistics test. It doesn't measure out. It's not true. So we have to change how we see this. If the gift of God is to be fully known and fully loved, and our human relationships are intended to reflect that gift as well, then vulnerability is a blessing, not a liability. So I think two great barriers to vulnerability are really simple. One, and we're not going to talk about this forever, but two great barriers to vulnerability. One is pride, and the other is shame. Okay, so these things stop us from being able to be vulnerable. Pride is that we don't want to look less. Shame is we are convinced that we are less. Okay? And both of those things on opposite sides of the spectrum are absolutely destructive to the possibility of truly being known and loved. Okay? So pride, we compare ourselves because we think that we need to appear better. Shame, we know we appear worse, and we're unable to be truthful and honest in our relationships. And so we have to deal with both of these things. We talk about pride a lot, and that's actually not like the challenge of being humble is something that we discuss frequently. We don't talk about shame that much. I find it fascinating in the book of Hebrews that when the writer of Hebrews is encouraging his fellow brothers and sisters in the faith, he talks about running the race with perseverance, fixing our eyes on Jesus. And then he kind of goes off as he begins thinking about Jesus, this person who perfected our faith. And he says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Endured the cross, scorning its shame. That word for scorn is, the Greek word is kataphroneo. And what it means is you despise it, but also with the despising, it means you think nothing of it. You do not give it space. And so what we're seeing is Jesus looked and endured the cross, and the shameful element of the cross, absolute vulnerability being laid out for all to see, he chose not to think of that as powerful at all. He despised the idea of being shamed and gave shame no power. And in doing so, he disarmed the power of shame. And so what we get is we get Jesus, the image on the cross of a God who is unafraid to be seen as broken. Jesus invites his disciples into the garden with him, openly admitting his struggle, even though they're going to let him down. He doesn't fight the accusations or the insults or the beatings or the crucifixion. If there's one thing we can be sure about, it is that Jesus is unafraid of being seen as vulnerable, being seen as weak. In fact, it's the vulnerability of Jesus that heals our world. It was his biggest strength. In what appears to be weakness, there is so much power. We have that power. We have that ability to give that gift to other people by going first. Now, I believe the atonement was about far more than Jesus simply giving us an example and a metaphor for life. But let's not overlook that, right? I mean, Jesus told us specifically to pick up and carry our cross. And while the willingness to suffer for doing what's good and what's right and representing Jesus is certainly a part of that, what if Jesus was actually also talking about the vulnerability of the cross? What if Jesus was talking about being unashamed to appear broken? You can't pick up a cross in private. It's not how it works. What if the cross includes embracing a life of vulnerability with one another in Jesus? Friends, we have got to learn how to see each other, to treat each other with massive amounts of grace and agape love, to welcome each other into our lives in deeper and deeper ways. This is already happening in our church, but it can happen a lot more. I promise. We have room to grow. There's a festival every year called Burning Man. Some of you familiar with it? It's in Nevada, and it's a really crazy event. We won't get into it. It's a little bit wild, but it's an arts and other things festival. And so in the middle of Nevada, in the middle of this desert, tens of thousands of people come together. Okay, and one of the big things is massive, massive art installations. And this is done by a guy named Jerome Villavant. And I just want you to dwell on this image for a moment. It's about 60 feet high, by the way. The artist's statement is moving us toward what is inside us longing to connect with what is inside another person. Yet shame, isolation, individualism, pride, these things keep us facing away from each other when the deepest parts of us are actually created to connect. In Colossians 3, Paul writes to the church, and he shares about how disciples are intended to relate to each other. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. See how you're loved first. Say, just so you know, you are holy, you are set apart by God's hope and design and purpose, and you are dearly loved. You can only do these things truly if you know you are dearly loved. If you know that the grace of Jesus is sufficient, you are dearly loved, so therefore, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Consider the value of a friendship marked by these things. Compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness. That does not line up with the culture of toxic masculinity that is shoved in the faces of us men, does it? That doesn't line up with the culture of perfectionism and presentation pushed on our women, does it? And there's plenty of crossover in those roles. We can't appear too soft or too sensitive, or no one will respect us. We can't appear to be falling apart. We must always look capable and managed. The Jesus way of creating friendship in true humility and true service and true compassion, vulnerability, in other words, agape love, they will define us as friends in the way Jesus says, and we must be committed to those things. Some of you need to learn how to let people in. But the first step in this process must be to let Jesus set you free from pride and shame. When we do that, our relationships can become absolutely transformative. I've always been a little bit uncomfortable with this passage because it's just so challenging. But in Proverbs, there's this phrase, wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. And when you look at that word sincere, the literal way of talking about that, or the literal translation means or would read as faithful are the wounds of a friend. But that word faithful means confirming, to make firm, or establishing. So sincere are the wounds could be translated as the wounds from a friend establish us. They form us. They build us. But the kisses from an enemy, and they're better than the kisses from an enemy. The idea of saying that when you get to a point where we have a beautiful, humble friendship where we are unafraid to be known and loved anyways, and unafraid to know and love anyways, we get to the point where not only are we welcoming challenging conversations with each other, but they actually end up building us into stronger, more beautiful people. They establish us. And I think so many of us look at this, we're like, well, we've been wounded by a friend and it was not sincere. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being able to be in such a relationship where someone can actually speak the truth to you and you can receive it. Do you know how few people can have the truth spoken to them and receive it? And you've got to earn that. So it's not, you can't just go around saying, well, it's your job to receive it, you jerk. That's not how this works. We have to build depths of connection and relationship in order that we can get to the point where friendships are transformative. And friendships become transformative when we are actually able to be both encouraged in our deepest insecurities and challenged in our mistakes and failures, but loved anyways. You were out of line there, but I'm going to walk with you all the way through this. I know. I will hear that. We can't hear that from everybody. So you have to figure out, and that takes discernment, how to let people in and who is appropriate to let in. But let's talk about some of those first steps if that sounds tough, and we're going to just zip through these and wrap up in just a couple minutes. But here are some steps in learning to ask, will you be my friend? First is in connection with Jesus. Just some ideas. In terms of learning how to dive deeper in friendship and initiate friendship in both of those things, what has to happen between you and Jesus first? We have to invite the forgiveness and grace of Jesus into our lives. So we have to actually be willing to experience the true love of God before we can move in to the agape love between people. Okay, so we have to invite the forgiveness of grace and grace of Jesus into your life. Along with that, we have to spend time learning how to actually be loved by Jesus. So we have to know that we are forgiven, that God's grace is sufficient, but that we are loved. That we are loved. And then, as we become more established and secure in our own identity, that we are loved, beloved children of God, then we can begin praying and asking for eyes to see. Look around. When Bethany and I moved here nearly 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, we knew nobody. So we were in a vulnerable position. And we decided to embrace that. So we would walk around to parks, go out. We'd say, hi, I don't know anybody. We're new here. What's your name? Will you be my friend? You know, we didn't maybe use those words, but it was that idea. We don't know anybody. What's your name? Can we know you, please? Please? And of course, we also believed that God was calling us to serve in building something beautiful. And so we also hoped that as people came into relationship with us, some might be drawn to follow Jesus with us together and form this thing that we didn't know what it would become. But it gave us boldness because we had to. Now, we might not have that ability to say, I'm new here anymore. You know, I can't say that. But what we can say is, hey, I enjoy meeting new people. What's your name? I'm Keith. You can say that. You're allowed. Now, if you don't like meeting new people, then you got to figure that one out. But we have to pray for eyes to see and to look around and to realize that even if you feel like you are at your relational capacity, and some of us are, and that happens, and that's a real thing, but even if we feel like we're at our relational capacity, other people might not be. And you can be a connector for other people. You can be a warm, welcoming presence in a tiny way that makes a big difference. You know who's great at this? Mark Davenport. So Mark has this gift. Sorry, man. It's brutal. I know. But Mark and I are close, so I'm allowed to do this without having it damage our friendship later. But Mark has a gift of being able to have a simple conversation with somebody when they walk in the doors of Life Path or after a gathering. And he might not become best friends with them, but they feel like they have a friend in their corner. They feel known just a little bit. They feel invited in. And that makes such a huge difference. So not every connection that we have has to move into, like, you want to move in together. You know, kind of like, that's not the point here, okay? What we're saying is when we look around with eyes to see, God opens doors for us to be a loving presence and to take the first step. I wrote a few months ago about going on a trail run and in the morning and running through all these cobwebs on the trail accidentally, because I was the first one on the trail in the morning, and how terrible it was. It was like every you know, 50 yards for miles. And God did something in me during that time, and I started to realize that every other person that hiked that day wouldn't have to walk through cobwebs. And I started to not only be willing to do it, I started to take joy in it. Because when I break through that barrier, it helps somebody else. That's what we can do. That's what we can be. So let's be unafraid to initiate kindness, okay? We live in this world where you keep your head down, especially if you grew up in, like, New York. Keep your head down. Do your thing. Don't look up because you might get, you know, into a fight with somebody, or that person might not be a good person, or all the lies that we tell ourselves. So pray for eyes to see. Okay, now let's talk about in relationship to other people. How do we move forward in relationship to other people? I think one great thing is to learn to ask meaningful questions. We ask really terrible questions as a culture. We talk about, you know, I can talk about the weather all day, but it doesn't get us anywhere. So as you have opportunity, ask people about real things. You have to have some social awareness to know that if they don't want to share, then okay, you know, you're not prying, but you're opening the door to talk about things of content. You know, people with young kids, they are always sleep deprived. Ask them how they're doing with that. You know, people with intense professional jobs are usually super stressed, but they're not allowed to share it with anybody. Every mom needs a massive amount of love. Different people have different stories, and until you ask the right questions, you might not know what they're dealing with. So let's be unafraid to ask better questions, to ask questions that have true meaning about how people are doing, what's important to them. Be honest with friends about your own journey. This is the huge part of just vulnerability. You have to go first sometimes. Be honest with people when you're having a difficult day. Now again, there's a balance there. If every one of you on a Sunday morning says, Keith, how are you doing? I'm not going to tell you all if Bethany and I had a rough morning. That's not appropriate, and you're not all in that world, sorry. But if we have a few people that we can be honest with, I'm not going to lie to you either. I might say, whew, rough day, but it's okay. You know, but we have to learn how to be honest with each other in friendships when there's something going on that we know that we could be that we could use support or encouragement for. Here's another idea. Just cut all the strategy and be courageously vulnerable. I want to have a better friendship. I really like you. Would you like to get together more often and talk about real things? Just cut all the strategy. Just put yourself out there. And who talks about everything? Five seconds of crazy bravery? What movie is that from? I can't remember. Some of you might know that. Tell me later if you know what I'm talking about. All that matters, you know, you don't have to be courageous. You just have to have 5 seconds of crazy bravery. Okay, and finally, prioritize time. This is just the last thing. We have so much trouble in our world of saying, I'm going to actually set aside time for this priority. Friendships, according to the scriptures, relationships are huge. If you're not willing to prioritize time together and say, I will set aside some time to develop friendships, then you just won't do it. You just won't do it. And so we have to actually prioritize time and say, I'm going to start with this as one of my rocks in the river, meaningful friendships that can be supportive and encouraging to me in Christ. Okay? At LifePath, the expressions that we have for these things, we have meal communities that we are trying to launch more and more of. Those are open communities. We have, I think, 4 of them right now that are active that meet either every week or every other week. And those are great chances to get together and talk about what's happening in life. They are intended to be places to be real. You still have to do your own work in order to make that happen. But that's what they're intended for. Also, we have triads, which is just a group of, you know, 2, 3, or 4 people who get together and ask specific questions about discipleship together. And you can get some resources there. Some triads, as they grow, they don't need those questions because you can just dive into what's really happening in life and encourage one another in your faith and in your relationships. But those are things that you can do with us. So the good news, friends, is you were made for this. You were made for this. Okay? You've just forgotten. Like me, many times. We've just forgotten, but we were made for this. The better news is Jesus has definitively destroyed the barriers that hinder you from being vulnerable. Jesus has definitively destroyed the barriers that hinder you from being vulnerable. You are loved beyond all that you can imagine. There is grace. And the best news is that you can start that deeper journey with Jesus and others today. So, do. Have a conversation this afternoon. Right? Send a text. Look around with open eyes. Shed some layers. Let's learn from the little children, and let's not be afraid to ask, will you be my friend? Let's pray. Father, sometimes all of the right ideas and steps and strategies in the world can't do what needs to happen mysteriously in our hearts. And so I pray that you would help us have the courage to be vulnerable, to break down whatever barriers need to be broken down in order for us to continue to move forward in meaningful, transformative friendships with one another. Give us eyes to see. Help us move toward mutuality. We ask these things in the powerful and strong name of Jesus. Amen.